For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back once again with our weekly look at the world of non-league football. A short and sweet version of the show this week, as nobody with a home base hangover wants to listen to me for far too long. Hopefully, though, a fair reflection of the non-league game and a celebration of the people within it. Well worth a listen, so let's get matters underway. So, with just a handful of games taking place this weekend in the non-league pyramid, it's possibly one of the quietest New Year's days ahead for many years, but not for everybody. Whilst football is in suspension for the players, the managers and the fans, for football administrators, the past year has perhaps been the busiest and most complicated ever, and it's not letting up either. Taking a break from his always very busy work-life schedule, it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to Secretary at the South West Peninsula Football League, Phil Hiscox. Welcome back, Phil.
Pleased to be with you, Tim.
Well, it's always a pleasure to get somebody on the show that is so, well, you're one of those Mr. Non-League people.
Well, it's funny, I suppose over the years I have become it. Not intentionally, I can assure you.
Well, not intentionally, because you tend to just keep your head down and get on with things. Now, yesterday we had a new statement from your board on the back of the government's latest tier changes. Have you ever met as much as a football league board?
No, even though physically, of course, we're not meeting. It's everything Zoom and WebEx and things these days. But yeah, I mean, on Sunday, that's the day after Boxing Day, I was sort of drawing up papers and sending the FA guides that come out on Christmas Eve to my board members, saying, look, you know, this is a potential problem here. The government are likely to make an announcement as soon as Wednesday. We need to be ready with what our response is. And so, you know, even over the sort of festive period, you know, there's work going on because you have to be reactive to the changing situation.
Yeah, now I spent a very short time on a league board. I've spent time, obviously, on my own club's board and things like that. I know that hard work that goes in to just making sure that football goes ahead. But this past year, I mean, give us an example of some of the difficulties that you faced. Because almost every day, the guidance and the interpretations, I think, have been changing.
Oh, it's been an absolute nightmare. We started in January and February with some of the worst weather that we often get down here in the southwest, because we often get weather fronts, certainly westerly weather fronts, before the rest of the country gets them. Then, obviously, March, we had the lockdown, and how on earth we cope with that, and how's the season going to be concluded, and how people apply for promotion and relegation. Just about got to the end of that, and then we had the project restart, which was a nightmare from the start, because you know, you were asking volunteers to write risk assessments that they had no real knowledge or skill base to do. So then you got other people in to try and help them, and then you ended up with a problem we certainly discovered, I'm sure other leagues did as well, that one or two clubs just sort of copied and pasted what other clubs had done, and you couldn't blame them for that, but of course that wasn't right either. And then we did actually make some remarkable progress in September and October. I did a fixture list that basically said, right, everybody's going to play Saturday midweek for the first 2 months. And at Halloween, we'd actually nearly caught up half of the games that we were behind from the late start. But then that was the high point, and it's been downhill ever since, isn't it? The November lockdown wiped out the whole month for the whole country. Restarted again in December, but we've had cases of COVID, even though, you know, traditionally we've been very low case numbers down here in the southwest. They have started creeping in, and we started having players with them, and you know, we had a player at Plymouth Marge on University, no symptoms whatsoever, but needed a test under the government scheme to go back home for Christmas from university. He had his test on Wednesday afternoon, went training Wednesday night with his teammates. Thursday morning, completely out of the blue, positive test result. It's just one nightmare after another.
And this is one of the things that I think, yeah, we all want football to be played. That you know, there's no doubt that we're all football fans, and we're only putting in all these hours and everything because we're football fans and we want football to be played. But health has to be a priority, and this is one of the things that, where you can't even see the risk, you know, it's not like you can go around with a UV pen and suddenly see where this thing is. it becomes even more complicated. And I think, like, the decision that your league's made and many other leagues have made, that at the moment we just can't play football.
No. And the FA guidance, which they obviously got from the government, which they issued on Christmas Eve, I can understand they've negotiated in what their opinion is a good deal to keep football in Tier 3 playing. But the reality is, and I say many of our listeners and yourself would have experienced this at a club, if you're asking a club to stage a game having to, first of all, rewrite their risk assessment in line with the new restrictions, then to have the crowd chopped in half and the clubhouse and the tea hut to be closed, and then you introduce things like the crowd has to be spread out no more than one deep, 2 metres apart around the perimeter, and this is probably the last straw for many, that the home club would be responsible for making sure there's no mixing of social, family, household bubbles.
Yeah, and that's ever since Project Restart came, that's been one of my big bugbears, is that we already are so much of the volunteers that help non-league run. And I still joke that I'm still one of the youngest in the boardroom wherever I go. So majority of these volunteers are going to be vulnerable. They're prepared to do almost anything, run through walls for their club, but that means tipping the balance on their own health and well-being, just to make sure that a game gets on, and going through the additional stress of trying to make sure that all these, you know, tick boxes have been completed.
Yeah.
And I don't actually think it's physically possible for, you know, some clubs are run by one or two people. You know, we're putting the whole of non-league at risk.
Yeah, as a prime example, Brixham in the South, they played two games in December before the lockdown, two home games. Their secretary is in his 80s and his wife basically won't let him go to the ground. So he's doing the paperwork and things, but not at the ground. He's then relying on a couple of his helpers to sort of man the gate and go and get the balls and all the rest of it, and run the tea hut when it was allowed to open. And they're all coming back saying to him, sorry, Bill, but yeah, I can't do it again next week. You know, I had to tell this person to sign in on the track and trace. I had to ask these people to move. I had to ask, you know, these people to not sort of go through the clubhouse because it's a one-way system, that sort of thing. And they can't enjoy that. That they're giving up of their time to volunteer is to enable football to happen. It's not to have an argument with somebody who can't read a one-way system sign that they've had to impose.
Yeah, and that is a big risk, that we then lose these volunteers forever. And we all know how difficult it is to recruit any volunteers. You know, but if we lose a bunch of them altogether, then non-league's at risk. And also, health has got to be the big priority. And I think the issues we're seeing further up the pyramid show the prevalence of the virus as well. You know, all the resources they've got. And I appreciate why football, like you said about Tier 3, the FA trying to allow football to take place. But football was also defined as a non-contact sport. Now, I have to wear a mask to walk into an empty shop. And I'm not sure whoever defined that definition has ever watched anybody defending corners.
No. And let's be perfectly honest, this idea that football isn't a contact, you know, at our level, whether we like it or not, players are going to car share to get to the ground. They are going to try and get changed out of the cold and out of the wet, and they're not going to stand out in a freezing rain and have a team talk at half time. As much as you can write a risk assessment to say that's what they should do and you encourage them to do it, it's just not policeable, really. And I have to say, and I was one of those people, I was a ground hopper, I've organised ground hops, I'm a football nut, but even for me, 2020-21 is not football as I know it, and therefore is not really enjoyable.
Yeah, and you've also touched upon the financial implications there, and yeah, even players car sharing, because down your way, you know, that even a local derby means a fair trip in the car normally, doesn't it? So,
Ilfracombe versus Holsworthy, I had as a festive fixture, and I think that's 30 miles between each ground, and that's their Boxing Day derby.
Yeah, so we all know how good Boxing Day public transport normally is, but in the current pandemic, I think you probably would have had to set out last week for that one. But we have to also understand, as you said about the tea huts, and you know, clubs No, I don't. I'm yet to find a club across the world that survives on people coming through the turnstiles, even if you're allowed the crowds that your ground can hold. And what we don't want
is
for non-league.
They need the bar. They need the tea hut. They need that as secondary income as an app, just to pay the basics: kit washing, referees' fees, that sort of thing.
And it's also during the week as well. All the other bits that a football club at the heart of the community would normally be there, not only for the people but also to bring in additional income to help them run as a football club on the Saturday and keep things ticking along. And we can't afford for non-league clubs to be running at a loss for half a season just to keep football ticking along.
Right. I've got clubs that have all sorts of other uses: old age pensioners' luncheon clubs in the week. Elmore, there's a children's nursery, use the hall during the week. All sorts of events and things that the community needs, and a lot of these things have just had to close down, and therefore the revenue stops. But a club having bingo on a Wednesday night now under Tier 3, you can't do it. Just can't do it.
But you're a solutions man like me, and you already said that you've organised all the fixtures. I mean, how your mind and computer must work to get all these fixtures organised? But I mean, Looking at the tables in the divisions across, you're almost halfway, aren't you, across the fixtures? So you've got a lot further in your games than many other leagues across the country.
Yeah, well, I think it's 37% we've played, which is more than any other National League System league. I think Ishmin League Division 1 South at 8% is the fewest. And of course, if they're in Tier 4, they've got no choice but to not play any more games. So I'd have to say that now that COVID's here in the southwest, the weather has turned. We've really got two choices, I think, as to how we conclude the season. Either the FA sets a percentage figure that all leagues can achieve, and I'd be fairly confident if they said, well, you need to get to 66% or 75%. We could probably do that from March to May. Whether other leagues can do that, I have my doubts, and therefore, is there a lot of point me making my clubs do it if the national system isn't going to do it, to sort of stay with me and allow promotion and relegation? In which case, I've already thought about, possibly March, April, having a sort of localised regional cup competition just to get some bar money in once the restrictions have been lifted a bit. But I'm also a firm believer that next season has to start on time. Otherwise, we'd just risk another season of this disaster if we carry on playing into June and July.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've seen some debate as to whether we shift the whole season and go from January to December as a season, just so that we can realign. But football is so much. It's almost like a football administration. I'd imagine you found is a bit like being a darts player. There's a lot of muscle memory, so there's a lot of stuff that you almost do without thinking. If things are going well.
Yes, indeed. I mean, you're already sort of planning AGMs, league dinners, things like promotion and relegation. That requires not just a conclusion on the league table, but ground grading by certain dates that the FA have set. Then it's, if you've had too many apply, which ones do you select? You have to have an AGM to confirm that before you have your constitution, before you can do next season's fixtures. I wouldn't be absolutely averse to having a double season, in as much as there's probably enough left of this season, even for us, and certainly for those leagues that have played less, to actually play the remainder of this season, next season, with new cup competitions to start for next season, to pad the fixtures out.
Yeah, so you're thinking of the solutions, but what about guidance from higher up? We keep trying to get a statement from the FA, and is there much on the horizon?
I hate to sort of put the boot in, but it's very difficult to defend them sometimes. I mean, the leagues were having a monthly WebEx hosted by the FA, and that happened up to and including November. The December one, if it had been the fourth Thursday of the month, it would have been Christmas Eve. So they sort of said, well, obviously it won't be Christmas Eve, but we'll tell you the new date. No new date came, so we didn't have one in December. And I suppose at the moment, as a league secretary, I'm just sort of waiting for the FA staff to return to the desks in the beginning of January, and hopefully they'll be in contact for another meeting.
Yeah, and as you say, yeah, COVID is amongst us. And even if we were looking, if something miraculous happened and, you know, we were able to get football back up and running in January, we still need a running time for clubs to get ready for that, and the players as well.
Yeah, and we're reliant on also, you know, normally when you start a new season, you start it in August and you're pretty confident that the pitches will be rock hard and able to play. You know, you try restarting in January or February, it could all become a mess with sort of snow, ice, rain, whatever as well.
But despite all of that, Phil, you're still cheery. You're still
fighting. You've got to, because otherwise you've got to laugh, otherwise you cry. I'm a great believer in that.
And I'm sure we're talking now, what, New Year's Eve morning. I'm sure you'll probably still be sending emails while other people have opened their bottles of champers to celebrate the new yearing.
I've already sent out a league newsletter bulletin this morning. I've got a list of jobs to do, and I'm going to start work on finding new dates for those fixtures in the first half of January that I've suspended. I obviously am a sucker for punishment.
You're a sucker for punishment, but you're our sucker for punishment, Phil. Thank you for all your hard work. We will stay in contact and see you know, how life progresses in 2021, but it's always a pleasure to get you on the Non-League Football Show, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, anytime.
So as we enter another uncertain year, the only certain thing is that developing yourself, facing new challenges, learning new things, that's the greatest way to keep the mind and body active. Our next guest, no stranger to the show, has probably got that written through him like a stick of rock. A former professional footballer turned professional boxer who won the British light welterweight title and known to us as a non-league manager, currently with Gainsborough Trinity in the Northern Premier League, but now also a friend of the Queen. To tell us more is a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, manager of Gainsborough Trinity, Curtis Woodhouse, BEM.
Corey, you gave me the big build up there, aren't you?
It could have been bigger, mate, but we haven't got time on the show, really. But, Curtis, congratulations on the recognition in the Queen's New Year's Honours List. BEM, British Empire Medal. But I understand the lads have already come up with another suggestion.
Yeah, unbelievable. Last night, I'm in a WhatsApp group with all my mates that I've known over years, but I just lose contact with everyone. So we set up a WhatsApp group, and they've renamed it the Bacon, Egg and Mushroom Medal, because they said that's all I've been eating since I've retired. So, yeah, I'm getting slaughtered. It's meant to be a proud moment. They're ruining it, I'm telling them.
Well, it is a proud moment. I mean, one of the questions that springs to mind is, what do you get with it? Is it like one of those black Nando's cards that we hear so much about? Does it give you access to bacon, eggs and mushroom wherever you go?
Well, my mum's a landlady in my local pub, and I rang her to see if I got any money off my beer, and that was a no. So I don't know what the perks actually are, but I've had a cup of tea in bed today, so we're starting off on a good note.
Well, that's the way to start a New Year's Eve, a cup of tea in bed. I'll have to talk to my family a bit more and maybe see if they can follow that up. Now, obviously, this recognition is not just for services to football, although that is mentioned as well, but also to your services to boxing. So tell us more about, well, I guess it's your day job, is it, the boxing stuff?
Well, I retired a few years ago now, but I'd never boxed before in my life until I was 26 years of age. I never even thought I was going to be a boxer. But at 26 years of age, I'd completely fallen out of love with football, just completely lost my way. And I was kind of scratching around for something else to do. I was a boxing fan, used to love watching it on the TV. And like most people, I'd sit there and think, I can do that. So I decided to give it a go. And after probably an hour of my first boxing session, I realised that I was useless. But I'd already decided I was going to, and made the announcement, I was going to try and become a professional. And a week before my first ever fight, the rankings came out, and I was ranked 189th in Great Britain out of 189. So I was literally the worst fighter in Great Britain. And the kid that I was fighting was ranked 187th. So it was like the Donkey Derby, and I beat him by 1 point. So it was realisation, really, of how far away I was ever achieving anything. And it took me 8-9 years to climb the rankings and become number one and win the British Light Welterweight Championship. So I think the recognition is more for the journey than any one one achievement that I did, because people have had miles better careers, football careers than me, and miles better boxing careers than me, but no one's combined the two, I suppose.
And to be fair, though, no one's got a CV as long as yours. I mean, if you're at Gainsborough Trinity now and you've been there a while, so you know, hopefully, you know, the season will kick on and we can do something with that. But when you send a CV in for a new job, you must have to get an extra ream of A4 paper.
Well, I've actually had an interview before. I won't name the club that I was interviewed for. And the chairman sat down with me and just spoke about boxing for about an hour. He was a huge boxing fan. I don't even know that he knew that I played football. He just spoke about boxing for an hour. What was that fight like? You know, this, that, and the other. And I didn't end up getting the job. I think he just interviewed me to talk about boxing. So that was a little bit crazy. But yeah, my life's been a little bit all over the place, really. You know, I've never been pigeonholed into anything. But moving forward, what I want to do moving forward is become a Football League manager. I love my job at Gainsborough Trinity. It's a brilliant club. And the only way I'm going to progress up the ladder is by doing a good job at Gainsborough. So my long-term aims are to manage successfully in the Football League, and who knows, maybe try and win the FA Cup or something like that. That'd be crazy. But yeah, I've got high ambitions in football management.
High ambitions in life as well. I think we've had you on before and we spoke about your autobiography back then. That was probably a number of years back now. It must be due an update on that one, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my life has changed quite a lot since I've retired. I'm working in schools at the moment, which I absolutely love. You know, I work with quite a lot of kids that get excluded from school and stuff like that, and are deemed as kind of the naughty kids, where the teachers don't want them in the class because they're very disruptive. They then get sent to people like me that can maybe mentor them and work with them. Because I left school with no GCSE. Well, one GCSE I left school with, and that was in PE. So I had no education myself and really struggled in school. So hopefully I can be a mentor to these kids. And with me, you know, getting this award and going on and achieving what I've achieved, literally, if I can do it, anybody can, because I was a bit of a lost hope at 16 years of age. And I was very, very fortunate that sport came into my life. So yeah, I'm hoping to inspire kind of the next generation from the areas that I was brought up in, and just for them to, you know, have a productive life in whatever it is. You know, I know not everyone's going to be a professional footballer or a sports person, but you know, people to get their first job, to put a deposit down on a house, to have a family, you know, things like that are massive achievements. So I'm hoping to help the next generation on their way.
Yeah, it's like I said in the opener there. I think 2020. If we've learned anything, it's yourself. You're putting yourself first is important, not to the detriment of others, but the self-development and the self-awareness is one of the most important things you could ever learn.
Yeah, 100%. And I always say, you know, and I was always brought up that, you know, my dad used to have a saying that make sure that you're coming correct. Forget about everything else that's going on around you. Make sure you're doing right by yourself first and foremost, you know, and then everything else kind of falls into place. But you know, I mean this year's been terrible, hasn't it? You know, and it is very, very important that we make sure that we're coming correct with ourselves. We're looking after ourselves, we're looking after our loved ones, we're not taking anything for granted. Yeah, it's been a real difficult year, you know, especially for the younger generation. You know, my eldest son's 17, and my youngest son's 8 years old, and my little girl's 14. You know, it's been really tough for them, you know, getting dragged out of school, missing a big part of their lives. It's so difficult. So we need to keep that in mind and make sure that we don't leave this next generation behind and just forget about them, really.
Yeah, I think the importance is building your network around you as well, isn't it? And that's where non-league and boxing as well are very similar in that they help people come together. But at the moment, we're sort of distanced because we can't have that touchy-feely bit that we all enjoy.
Yeah, I love non-league, and people that have never experienced non-league, that have only known league football, are really missing a trick. It's brilliant. I've got about 50 people that stand behind my dugout and tell me when I should be making a sub, tell me what system we're playing. We have a laugh and a joke. It's brilliant. I love it. I really love that personal touch of non-league. And it's weird to have that taken away this year has been really, really hard. And I think we all knew anyway that football without fans was nothing. But this has really cemented the fact that without the fans and without that feeling and the volunteers, what a big impact they make. And, you know, I think we really need to respect and appreciate them moving forward, which we all do anyway. But yeah, I mean, it's so hard. It's difficult. Just speaking of our own club, Gainsborough Trinity, we found it really, really difficult just to survive this, not to think about anything, you know, how many points we're getting or where we are in the league. That's not really been at the forefront of anybody's thoughts. It's just, can we survive this and have a football club after it's all finished? And there's so many other clubs in the same predicament as us.
Yeah, we've spoken to Phil Hiscox, who's the secretary down in the South West Peninsula League, and they've been trying to make sure that clubs can get games on, but they've just had to call this suspension like so many other leagues, because clubs just can't afford, with the limited number of people they're allowed through the gates, to keep a club running.
Yeah, and that's the same with us. You know, if that was to happen and we were to play in front of 300 fans, every game we'd be hemorrhaging money. You know, and like I said, we don't have that luxury of a Russian billionaire behind a football club. You know, our chairman, Richard Kane, he runs a club brilliantly, and without him, there would be no Gainsborough Trinity. But people are not just going to hemorrhage money every single week because they can't afford to. Outside of this, they've got family and businesses that they have to take care of. And like I said, we're the same as 95% of every other non-league club. We kind of live week to week, and the home revenue keeps us going until the next home game. So we just couldn't, are not in a position to, you know, like I said, hemorrhage money every home game. It just wouldn't be sustainable for any longer than a couple of months.
And what about you as a gaffer then, you know, trying to keep the team together and keep the spirits going? Has WhatsApp been overloaded with messages over Christmas?
Yeah, it's been really, really tough. We've done the Zoom classes. We've tried to do everything we possibly can to kind of keep the camaraderie, keep the togetherness, just keep in touch with each other. We've trained when we can. We've tried to arrange friendlies that have then been cancelled. It's been really, really tough. On the plus side, this is the longest unbeaten run I've ever been on. So, yeah, but I mean, it's been really, really difficult. You know, me as a manager, I'm just trying to touch base with the lads the best I can and make sure everybody's, you know, mental health's right as well. You know, we forget about that. But football is very secondary when it comes to things like this. We have to make sure that lads as people are okay. So just touching base with people, seeing that we get through it all okay and we return to football, you know, when it's safe to do so, I suppose.
Yeah, and how do you see that unfolding? Can you see the season getting finished?
But I mean, from the outside looking in, I don't have any inside information whatsoever. And we always seem to be the last ones to know. But I mean, now we're in tier four. You know, I was hoping we were going to go from three to two, but we're going three to four. And the cases are rising every week. So it doesn't look like we're going to be in tier two anytime soon. So, I mean, I don't, the league has got such a difficult job how they restart and make everybody happy, and if we restart, I mean, it's going to be a real challenge. I think without government assistance financially, I think it's going to be very, very difficult to come anywhere close to finishing the season.
Yeah, and you say about those football administrators, like when we spoke to Phil earlier, that they can try their hardest, but things are changing on a daily basis, aren't they? And there's only so much foresight and planning that you can put into that. And we are really just at the behest of this virus, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the government they review the tier system every 2 weeks, don't they? I think that's the case with them. So how can the Football League do anything other than that? You know, how can we plan any further along than 2 weeks? So they're in such a difficult position. I don't envy them one bit, because there's so many clubs that, not everyone's got in the same situation. You know, just in our league, for example, you have South Shields, who get 1,600 people at home games. You get Scarborough, I think they averaged 1,200 last season. FC United, they've got really, really big fan bases. So to restrict them to 600 is crippling them. But us at Gainsborough Trinity, we can survive on 600 through the door. So there's not kind of a rule that suits everybody. And that's a really difficult part. We're never going to get a situation where everybody signs it off and says, yep, yeah, that's brilliant, let's move forward. So I think we're going to all have to compromise if we are to restart the league and just, not everyone's going to win, but can we get a scenario where nobody loses too big? I think that's the case, and let's try and finish if we possibly can. But above all of that is people's health.
Yeah.
You know, if it's not healthy to do so, we just can't play. It's not even, it's a non-negotiable, really. You know, all the volunteers at ours are senior members of society, you know, so we've got to think about them. We can't be putting them at risk for what's only, if we're going to be honest, it's a game of football, isn't it? So, you know, we have to think on the grand scheme of things, safety has to be paramount.
Indeed, echoing everything that we've been saying on this show for a number of weeks, and yeah, the need for non-league to pull together and not you know, fragment out as well. So Curtis, you know, normally you'd be buzzing this morning with a New Year's Day football coming along. What does the end of 2020 bring for you?
Well, the Boxing Day is a tough one for me because I love Boxing Day football. You know, I love that waking up, you've got a game. It's normally a local derby. Same with New Year's Day. I think we were due to play Matlock today, which is a local derby there. I think second or third in the league. It'd have been a great game. And like you said, I'm just buzzing for it. But, you know, bringing in the new year, I've stocked up on plenty of booze. So it's going to be a messy one. We've got a darts tournament going on in our house. My eldest son got a darts board for Christmas, so me and all the family are going to have a darts competition. But yeah, we're just going to we're just going to make the best of what the situation is, isn't it? You know, and you know, keep smiling and keep our heads up and keep plugging away. But yeah, no doubt it'll get a little bit messy in our household with as much booze as possible and a few laughs and a few dodgy songs. So I'm looking forward to it. Make the best of what we've got, eh?
That's brilliant. That's the Curtis Woodhouse that we've known to grow and love. And maybe Curtis Woodhouse BEM, but still the old Curtis Woodhouse. Have a great new year, and we'll speak to you soon.
You too. Thanks for the call. Much appreciated.
So that's it for this week. Happy New Year to you all. Hopefully 2021 we'll have something more positive for the non-league game. I think it's important that the non-league begins to work together again and work a solution out as to how we can get football back as much as we know it and used to love it. And but it needs to be football for all and across the pyramid so that we're not just playing a handful of games here and a handful of games there. It might not be that the non-league New Year that everybody had hoped for, but hopefully this short and sweet show can give you an introduction into the wonderful people and the wonderful things that do happen in non-league, even when we haven't got any football on the pitch. Thank you to all of my guests. Thank you to everybody for listening, wherever you may be listening. Probably not on the terraces nowadays, but hopefully, you know, tucked up warm at home and enjoying the start of 2021. Do get a chance. You can follow us throughout the season and join us throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson's there at DaveAnderson78, and it will be back very soon on this show as well. And myself, I'm there at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Deezer, on TuneIn Radio, via smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Take a look there too for the Non-League Gaffer Tapes, which we're looking at doing a socially distanced version if we can, which is not quite the same because Dave Anderson does like to see the whites of people's eyes, but we'll see how we can go there. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA